And hello out there to all you Brooklyn folk and beyond. This is Sam Maxwell, and we're here with the Bedford and Sullivan Podcast, the podcast that keeps you, the audience, active listeners in the Brooklyn Dodgers TV series research process. And there is always a lot to discuss, whether it be the history of Brooklyn, whether it be the history of the Brooklyn baseball club, the Dodgers, as formerly known, the Robins, the Superbas. They were known as many things over the years. And while people were following them, Brooklyn was shaking off its independence very reluctantly. And part of that, of course, the consolidation, was the Fire Department of New York taking over for the Brooklyn Fire Department. And I thought, since it's been a while since we've been on the podcast, that we'd get right into it by inviting a prolific guest of ours, the Brooklyn Borough historian Ron Schweiger, on the podcast. So first of all, Ron, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me. Glad to be here again, Sam.
As always. And somebody who has been a longtime listener and was a first-time caller a few podcasts ago back in 2022, and that is Rob Lopez. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing good, gentlemen. Good afternoon, and thank you, as always, for having me on your podcast.
Absolutely. And so I thought you being part of the FDNY, I thought you would give some good insight, and you also talk about – you also started out your career in Brooklyn, so we will certainly get to that. But I'm going to go to Mr. Ron Schweiger first to kind of give an overview of the history of the fire department in Brooklyn.
Okay. Thank you, Sam, and good afternoon, everybody who's listening in. As some of you may or may not know, when the Dutch first arrived here in the 1600s, they established five Dutch towns in what we now call Kings County. There was one English town called Gravesend that was founded by a woman named Lady Deborah Moody, and that's at the southern tip of Brooklyn, where Coney Island, Brighton Beach, Sheepshea Bay are located. Eventually, as these little villages or towns grew, of course, they needed fire protection, and there was no central location for all of Kings County. Each town had to supply their own equipment and their own source of manpower to fight fires. In Flatbush, they sent Flatbush, and incidentally, I'm doing a walking tour this Thursday, which is booked already, on the history of the town of Flatbush, which the center of which was the intersection of Church Avenue and Flatbush Avenue. The Flatbush Dutch Reformed Church is on that corner, and the first church on that corner was built in 1654, the second one in 1699, and the one that stands there today dates to 1796. Very, very historic. As far as firefighting is concerned, the first Flatbush organized engine company was in 1825. And the person that organized that was actually the principal of Erasmus Hall Academy, Erasmus High School. His name was Jonathan Kellogg, no relation to Kellogg Rice Krispies. It was a horse-drawn cart engine that was they got that from Connecticut, and it needed six men to operate. And incidentally, the firehouse was located behind the graveyard of the Dutch Reformed Church. Okay, there was a bucket brigade that was needed to maintain the water supply in the reservoir of the tank on the cart. And of course, the bucket brigade had to keep adding water to the pump, to the tank on the park. And that was quite an ordeal, too. The builders, in fact, probably all, there was an incident that occurred 832, 7 years later. Flatbush eventually became the county seat of Kings County. It wasn't until the English took over, by the way, in 1664, actually, things started to change. And by 1683, I think it was, that all of was designated by the English King's County, of course, named after King of England. But there was an incident that occurred at the King's County House, which again was the county seat for all the King's County in 1832. The courthouse burned down. And the story behind that is it was because of a love affair. Now,
hey,
Ron,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but if there's any way that you can call back from either your home line or just find a different place in your home, both Rob and I are finding it very choppy, and I just want to make sure that the interesting stuff that you were speaking on is as clear to the audience as possible.
All right. Actually, I'm sitting in my dining room. I don't know why it's happening. Can you hear me? Am I coming through okay now?
It's a little bit better. Is there any way that you can call from your home line?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give me a minute or two.
I'll make sure to monitor the studio and bring you on
ASAP. Thank you so much. Excellent. Rob, you know,
okay.
It just kind of reminds me that I need to get out of 2012 when it comes to the technology of this. You know, we're still kind of doing it like it's a like it's the radio call-in show. But hey, you know, that's just how it goes. So I'm going to go to you before we have Mr. Schweiger back. I'm going to go to you to give us a little bit of a history lesson on your own personal fire department history, which just started Brooklyn.
Okay, you got some feedback there. Is that coming in on
your
end as well?
Yeah, I got him. He's calling back from the home line, but I just muted him on his cell phone. So.
Okay.
I just muted my cell phone also, Sam. Can you hear me?
Okay, I can hear you. Yes, we can hear you. So we're gonna give it to Rob and then pass it back to you in a moment, Mr. Schweiger.
Why am I still getting it?
I would say just hang up your cell phone.
I just did.
There we go.
I just did. Can
perfect.
You hear me?
We can hear you perfectly now.
Excellent. So I don't know what you missed when I was talking before.
Give it a second. I'm going to pass it over to Rob, and then we'll pass it back to you. And I have an idea as to where we left off with you. But I'm going to give it to Mr. Lopez real quick, and he's going to give us a little bit of a little bit of his own personal FDNY history.
Okay.
All right. All right, gentlemen, thank you. And if there's any technical difficulties on my end, please feel free to jump in and let me know. So I'm on a cell phone myself, and I could call back from a landline. So basically my connection with the guys on the job called the BFD, Brooklyn Fire Department, is when I first started my career, I was appointed in July of 2001. And on the tail end of my training, at the time, my academy class, we were given orders that we go on what they call a training rotation program. So that basically consisted of a pair of firefighters going to Double Houses, which is an engine company and a ladder company throughout the city, usually until they see where you live logistically and try to put you somewhere. But at that time, that did not exist. They just simply put you where they felt like putting you, which at the time was assigned according to your last name. So there was a gentleman who also had a last name L. The both of us were assigned to Engine Company 219, Ladder 105, in the Prospect Heights section of Brooklyn. So both of you probably are very well aware that on Dean Street, it's a block. I think it's just one block away from the border on Flatbush Avenue between Park Slope and Prospect Heights. So to start my rotation program, I was assigned there on Friday, September 7th of 2001. So we go there, and naturally, you know, we stop at a bakery. We bring cakes. So naturally, the guy that I went with was a lot younger than me and had no idea. So I said, listen, I know the place we're going to go to because the training academy is on Randall's Island in the East River. So from there, I went, okay, I know the place. So I go straight to Junior's, get the cheesecake, get some cookies. I'm like, it's got to be a home run. If you go to Junior's, it shows that, you know, these guys, you know, it's not cheap, and you bring a good Junior's cheesecake, it shows that you have some kind of class. So
right, exactly.
So I get there, and this young man, younger than me, you know, opens the door, and I salute him. We're there in our uniforms and clean-cut haircuts and salute, and he goes, not me, you go in the back. So the guys are in the back. And we go in the back in the kitchen area of 219-105, and, you know, there's everybody there just waiting for us. And it was a unique time where just by me telling you guys with that date, you know what's going to obviously lead up to, where I, you know, that was a Friday afternoon, and I stayed there until, I mean, God knows, until like 11 o'clock at night, you know, the guys, you know, just hanging out, asking me 1,000 questions, where you from? I told them I'm from the Bronx. They're like, what the hell are you doing here? I'm like, well, I'm just following orders. So I'm just here. And so what? At the time, I was ordered to be there for 7 weeks in the engine company and then do another 7 weeks in the ladder company where I get experience on both sides of the floor of operations. And then upon my 14-week rotation, when it's completed, I was to go back to the academy, complete some more peace officer training, EMS training, and then graduate in January. So I'm there hanging out all night until like midnight on Friday. The other kid goes home, whatever, and you know, I meet all the guys in the house. And I was supposed to start on Monday and Tuesday, but we received orders the next day where it's like, no, you're going to go to Fort Totten, which is a military post in Queens, right on the other side of the Frontenac Bridge. They're like, no, your orders have changed. You're going to medical training, night classes, Monday, Tuesday. Then you guys start Wednesday. So that was the last second change. So I'm like, ah, a little disappointed, whatever. And then comes Tuesday, September 11th, obviously, no explanation needed. Everything's upside down, and I'm home at the time because Monday night I had class over in Queens at Fort Totten. Most of the guys that were at that class that night go to Bell Boulevard, which is all the Irish bars there. They go hanging out. I'm like, nah, I'm going home because at the time I was living in Throgs Neck, which is on the Bronx side of that bridge. I go home, get a good night's sleep. I wake up the next morning early, everything unfolds, and there's just no way for me to get to Dean Street. So I wound up responding down with a couple of Bronx companies down to West Street, where everything unfolded, and which is a whole other story. But getting back to Dean Street.
Yeah, first off, you know, I know where the fact that, you know, I obviously didn't know that the beginning of your story led to 9/11. So firstly, just may I have to say thank you for your service and sacrifice, and we're grateful, so grateful that you're still here.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm trying to give you the short version where, I'm digressing to Brooklyn firefighting history, but that's my unique introduction, not only to my job, but, you know, into that firehouse in Brooklyn. And so, you know, that my whole experience down there is a whole nother story, but I wound up eventually hooking up with some of the guys the next day to where we wound up losing the entire 105 company. Every guy in 105 was lost, and one guy in 219 was lost. So they had a huge hit to that firehouse. So it turned everything upside down, naturally, with everything else in the world that day, naturally. So I wound up staying there because at the time I was single, so I had no ties or I had to be home for anything, anybody in the family. I lived by myself at the time. You know, I wound up just staying there for days and nights on end, just helping out around the firehouse, going down to, you know, lower Manhattan, looking for these guys, which a number of them are still missing to this day. So I have a very unique bond to that place to where, you know, I wanted to stay there. And the thing that wound up working out where I wound up not even going across the floor, as we call, I only wound up staying there for about 2 months before a good number of my academy class, we just got all reassigned to firehouses in Manhattan that were just devastated because the majority of the losses were in that part of Brooklyn, like downtown Brooklyn, like Fort Greene, Flatbush. What's the place right on the water where it's forget the name of that section where all the movie studio is. I forget. It'll come.
Midwood. Midwood.
No, not Midwood. It's right on the water. It used to be like a no man's land.
Red Hook?
Red Hook. Thank you. Thank you, Sam. Thank you. So Red Hook, those companies had to get replenished. I wound up going to Midtown Manhattan, you know, not by choice, but I mean, I was told that's where I was going. So, but my time in Brooklyn, you know, for the few months that I was there, you know, it was just very different from what, you know, any regular training program was going to be. Getting to know the neighborhood better, the people that were living in the neighborhood at the time on Dean Street, on Carlton, the police precinct around the corner, which I think is the 7-8 on Bergen Street, how that neighborhood came together. And obviously, you know, this was pre-Barclay Center, which the area where that arena is on was still a couple blocks of, you know, small residential houses, a couple of brownstones and coffee shops. The people that were very supportive of us there, the uniqueness of the neighborhood where that part of Dean Street had not become so gentrified as it was today. You still had pretty much the last vestiges of the old school neighborhood. It was still a little bit on the ghetto side. Nonetheless, the people were still very supportive of us and very kind. And I have nothing but wonderful memories to where even after I was taken out of that house and reassigned to Manhattan, I made it a point to go back there, especially I think for 11 years in a row. I went there for every September 11th memorial for the guys that were there. And in the passage of time and anything, you know, especially in the work field and in the fire department, you know, the guys, you know, the place changes either through, you know, guys retire, guys move on and get promoted to higher ranks or transfer somewhere else. So there's the last time I was there was not that long ago. It was less than 2 years ago, and there's only two people in the house left that I know that were working there when I was there in 2001. So, and then, you know, of course, you know, they call that area Little Manhattan now. I don't know if that's a term you've heard, Sam, being that you live not too far from that neighborhood, I believe. Yeah, the guys referred to say, oh, it's Little Manhattan because of the, you know, Ron, I don't know if you heard that term either.
No, I haven't, but it's starting to look like Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah.
One building right next to the Dime, I think they're making it with the Dime Savings Bank. I mean, the base of the foundation is the Dime Savings Bank of Brooklyn off of Fulton Street, but the building is just, you know, I've finally started to appreciate the architecture of it. I'm tangenting a little bit, but it is remarkable what's happening down there. I'm going to go to Ron, and Ron, I think we're going to put a hold on the history lesson because I have an idea as to where I want you to start, but I'd like to see if you have any follow-ups for the story you just heard from Ron.
Not so much, really, as I was mentioning earlier, each of the towns had to have their own fire company until 1898, 1899, when Brooklyn and the other counties became consolidated into the greater city of New York. And then the individual fire companies from each town was consolidated into the New York City Fire Department. However, some of them still remained as volunteer fire companies. Sam, I think I sent you a picture that shows a photograph from 1931 in front of what was the original Lundy's restaurant. And in the front, there's a sign that says Villa Peg Inn, and then it said the Gravesend Volunteer Firemen's Association, their annual dinner or something. And it's dated, I think, March of 1931. So as late as 1931, the area of Brooklyn of Gravesend, although it was part of the city's firefighting, had its own separate volunteer firemen's association. And in 1925, I know that Flatbush had a volunteer firemen association as well. I was doing research on Flatbush a number of years ago, and I found a booklet for the 25th anniversary. No, it was 1925. The 1925 issue of the Flatbush Volunteer Firemen's Association. So as late as the 1920s, and as Gravesend, 1931, there still was a volunteer fire association, even though it was small, being encompassed around by the New York City Fire Department. So it was unusual to see that they still had volunteers as late as that.
So I'm going to go to Rob here. So one of the things that got me kind of interested in the history of all of this is, as you go through Brooklyn, you do see remnants of the Brooklyn Fire Department when it was its own city. And that was what was so interesting when you said that that's what the department always refers to Brooklyn as, the Brooklyn side of everything, the BFD, the Brooklyn Fire Department. So a lot, I know that there's one particular house on, I believe it's, I forget what corner it is, but it's on Rogers Avenue, and it says Brooklyn Fire Department outside, and usually that indicates that the building was built before 1896 or 1898, which is exactly when the consolidation occurred. So the house that you were on Dean Street, what was the avenue it was off again?
It was between, you see that overpass is gone now. I think it's between 6th at the time and Carlton. I mean, I can look on the map.
Okay.
It's right around the corner. I believe it's between 6th and Carlton.
Do you remember at all how old how old the house was?
So the two units in there, engine 219-105, were formerly what we call single companies. So they had their own firehouse in the general area where 219, I think, was further down on Dean Street going east by a few blocks. The structure was still there because the guy showed me, this is where the engine used to be housed in. And then ladder 105, their old quarters was on Pacific Street, where logistically it would probably be in one of the hockey goal nets in the Barclay Center. It was literally across the street from, because previous to the Barclay Center, I'm sure, Ron, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that was like a pit. It was a train yard for the Long Island Railroad. I remember it was exposed. We used to go over there once in a while.
It was a train yard for the Long Island Railroad. In fact, Walter O'Malley, who owned the Brooklyn Dodgers, he wanted to build a new stadium on that site to replace Ebbets Field. And, of course, it never happened. And that's the Barclays Center was built on that site for the same reason O'Malley wanted it there, because nine subway lines go at that location, including the Long Island Railroad. So that's why the
property center was built. I feel like Atlantic Center is basically the equivalent of Times Square in terms of transit hub in Brooklyn.
Yes.
No, I agree absolutely.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I know this could quickly turn into a O'Malley hatred Brooklyn Dodger conversation again. And believe me, I'll go all the live long day with that. But getting back to the point, so getting back to the firehouse that I was in, those two companies merged in from what I believe was 1977. So the firehouse is there. Most of those firehouses do have cornerstones with the date there. So it's either 76 or 77. So that's when the two units merged. And the former firehouses for each unit did stand. 219 is still there, which is further east on Dean. And then 105, their quarters was taken down during the construction of the Barclays Center. So but getting to where at Rogers Avenue, that firehouse is still there. So that's engine 332. I don't know who the latter is. I think it might be 174. I'm not sure. But as we call them in the Bronx, those triple-digit numbers. So because everywhere else in the city, Manhattan and Bronx, is double numbers. So we go back and forth with the bantering of that. We don't acknowledge those triple-digit numbers. So
I'm sorry. I keep interrupting.
So it's all right. There is you brought up the Rogers Avenue house where, there's still houses that still have that BFD on the wall, on the exterior of the firehouse. So, being that, I think, Ron, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the city merger was 1898 or 99.
January 1st, 1898.
Okay. All right, good. All right, I still know my history a little bit. So that goes to show you how old those structures are, that they're still there standing and they still look good. The most interesting thing familiar with it is what was the original Brooklyn Fire Department headquarters on J Street in downtown Brooklyn, which is still standing there. And I'm sure you're more than familiar with it, which is a very unique architecture. It's a beautiful structure. I think it is designated a national landmark.
I know it's a New York City landmark. Whether it's national or not, I don't know. As a
New
beautiful arch entrance.
Yes,
I gotta check that out.
Sam, I know you're always walking around the city. I don't know if you've ever seen this structure, but it's on J Street in downtown Brooklyn, just a few blocks from the current fire department headquarters. If you look it up, you'll definitely find it in 2 seconds on the internet. So, but that's another beautiful structure that is, it is preserved as it should be, which is the original headquarters. So that's something that the audience, if they're interested in that, they could definitely look that up.
I know you have to go, Rob, and I think that's why I was rushing a question earlier. So again, I apologize, but
you got 10 more minutes. Yeah, to me.
There you go. Perfect. So I'm curious whether you in general amongst the department, I'm guessing you saw the King of Staten Island, which is so filled with the camaraderie of the fire department. Have you seen it?
No, I have not seen that, but I have a good – I've seen little bits and pieces and, of course, guys in the house talking about it. But from the little that I've seen and heard, that is to go too far with the topic again. But, Pete Davidson's dad was a 9/11 responder, and he did pass away in the line of duty on that day. So the depiction of firemen in that film, from what I was told and a little I saw, is pretty much spot on as far as the banter back and forth and the camaraderie back and forth and the closeness.
Yeah, I thought that was one of my favorite parts about the entire movie, and the movie really stuck with me, and I recommend it to everybody to see Pete Davidson's vehicle there, because I appreciate just the tangent that he didn't within the plot line of the movie, it wasn't folk. I thought they made a solid decision that if they went with his father dying in 9/11, that might take away from the rest of the story. So they went with him dying in a hotel fire. You know, no spoils, but it is not, you know, verbatim Pete Davidson's story. It's adapted well, and I highly recommend it to everybody out there if they want to see a good movie that may have gotten lost within everybody's ether because of the pandemic. It didn't get released into theaters. It was only available via streaming. It's a really fantastic movie and one of Judd Apatow's best, so for certain, check it out. Rob, since you're going to be the first to go, I'd like to, anything else you would like to discuss over the next less than 10 minutes?
Oh, well, the limited time that I was down there, like I said, it's nothing but unique memories, you know, highs and lows, being that at the time period when I was down there, something I'll never forget, the people in the neighborhood at the time, it was right before, you know, like I was saying, that like that Prospect Heights neighborhood became very gentrified and a lot of people left, and there was still people there that had been living there for decades and decades. And it was something that I'll never forget. I don't remember everybody's names, but the people who were so genuine, always coming by the firehouse and showing their support, especially on how devastated our particular unit was at the time, where like I said, I can't remember. I think there are still a number of members that are still unaccounted for because of their last known location. So it's, I mean, if you ever have a chance to go by the house on Dean Street, you know, there is a memorial outside where you see all those members. And I think I was going back to where when I first opened the door, when I first rang the bell for the firehouse, the kid that opened up the door, you know, I saluted him. He goes, "Don't salute me." I wound up finding out that, and I only met him for that one day. He got on the class before I did. So we're both what we call probationary firefighters at the time. And he wound up working that Tuesday and, you know, he's still unaccounted for. His name is Dennis Oberg, young kid, newly married, very,
oh,
like,
man.
I said, younger than me. I think he was only 20. Five at the time. So that's something that I always, you know, will never forget, you know, especially with that neighborhood and everything. And, you know, I don't want to bring down the conversation. I mean, I know this is about Brooklyn Fire Department.
No, it's
history,
poignant.
But, you know,
it's
just, it's unique. And, you know, I always hold the place in high regard, the neighborhood in high regard. It's, you know, I mean, they actually gave me the choice. They're like, "Do you want to stay? We know you want to, you live in the Bronx and it'll be a long ride." I'm like, "Yeah, I'll stay. But, you know, the higher powers that be wound up getting, what we call, you know, sticks in the wind. We wound up just getting blown somewhere else and reassigned to Manhattan. So it was out of my hands. But that Prospect Heights, Park Slope area where we responded was just a great neighborhood. It was unique.
Yeah.
The people were wonderful. The neighborhood was great, being that, you know, I was born and bred in the Bronx. I was never really ever down there. And, you know, Sam, as you know, that's just a very short walk from where Ebbets Field was. It was just Dean Street is just a little north, probably like a 15-minute walk north, 5-minute car drive from where the Ebbets Field used to be and where the apartment is now. I mean, we did respond up to, like, Grand Army Plaza, a little bit near the Brooklyn Museum, but that was it because they got other units over there. So it was close enough. So it was, but the architecture, like I said, that original, the headquarters of that Brooklyn Fire Department is something that I'm surprised you don't know about it.
Well, you know, I'm a Brooklyn bicycler. You know, I just think that has a better ring than the Brooklyn cyclist, the Brooklyn bicycler. So I will certainly, I'm always going all over the former city, and I will make sure on my next, not only considering that I'm pretty sure it's Bergen that goes down, so it's Dean that goes up in terms of the way of the street. So I will take a look the next time that I'm cycling back to my Flatbush apartment and take a look at the both the newer house that you mentioned, but also the older structures that you said was just a little further east. And I before you go, I have to mention in ties to 9/11 that one of the things we've talked about a lot with Carl Erskine on this podcast, and so I know we're going to be repeating ourselves, but it must be mentioned once more. And I'm sure, Rob, you remember sometimes where Carl has recollected about coming in after 9/11 and being basically the red carpet was put out by the fire department from the airport for Carl to be there to support the folks, you folks that lost a lot of great men and women. And it's always stuck with me, that story, because it's just not only shows what the Brooklyn Dodgers still mean to Brooklyn, but what they've all, you know, what they've always meant, even to these, even to a lot of, you know, firefighters at the time who were certainly not, most likely not around when the Dodgers were in town.
Yes, that was, I mean, I'll always have my, you know, I'm always so appreciative of you having me on that podcast where I got to speak to Mr. Erskine and, you know, complete gentleman. It was an honor to communicate with him, and especially that, which I was not aware of the fire department, you know, treating him like that, which is, you know, listen, that it makes me feel great knowing that someone like him is, you know, never forgotten despite, you know, the Dodgers being gone for, you know, all these decades now. So, and, you know, and that he, you know, he's treated like that and he appreciates it. Yeah. It's a great feeling knowing that we took care of him like that.
Rob, are you aware that the,
yeah.
You know, the street, the exit on the Belt Parkway, the Erskine Street exit?
Yes, sir. Yes. I'm very aware of
that. That is named for Carl Erskine. And I told that to him, and he was very, very pleased that when that street was originally mapped out in the 1970s, the DOT workers that were mapping out the street asked permission if they can name the street. It was only a short street, maybe two or three blocks long. And their favorite pitcher for the Brooklyn Dodgers was Carl Erskine. But when this new exit was made on the Belt Parkway, they did was extend that 1970s Erskine Street a few blocks further, and that became the Erskine Street exit on the Belt Parkway.
Wow. That I wasn't aware of, and that's great.
And Carl and I have joked about the idea that it should have been spelled Oyskin Street. So, Rob,
yes,
I know you got to get going, and greatly appreciate you coming on. And I, like you said, like to make a long story short, let's make that story long another time. You're welcome back.
Absolutely, yes. Always keen. Listen, we follow each other on the social media platform there, and I'm always, you know, seeing what you're doing, and I always give your stuff a like. And yeah, it's always a pleasure, Sam. And I'm glad I was able to fit a few minutes in. I'm sorry it's on the short side. And Mr. Schweiger, it was a pleasure to exchange some information historical today. And thank you for, you know, thank you for giving us your time today.
My pleasure. Take care and good luck.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good day.
You as well, Rob. Take care.
All right. Bye.
So, Ron, you know, such fascinating stuff there. And again, thanks to Mr. Rob Lopez for joining us on this podcast, as well as the job he does. You know, I don't have that head to do that. You know, I'm not a soldier, if you will. I'm the USO show. And you have to give credit where credit's due, and you have to applaud with a standing ovation the work that folks like him do to make sure that we are protected, you know, specifically in this case from nature's you know, hell wrath, if you will. Ron, before I go, you know, You did mention some of the stuff that we were not able to hear earlier on in the podcast, but is there anything off the top of your head, having heard all that stuff, before we dive back into the historical elements?
Yeah, well, earlier I mentioned about the volunteer fire department in Flatbush, but if we head further east, south and east, we have the Volunteer Firemen's Association of Flatlands. Now, Flatlands was one of the Dutch towns. The original name was New Amersfoort, which is Dutch, but the English changed it to Flatlands. And the center of the town was today's intersection of King's Highway and Flatbush Avenue. I live about 3 or 4 blocks from that intersection. But the Volunteer Firemen's Association was actually further east of that intersection in an area known as Canarsie. Canarsie was actually part of the town of Flatlands, except in the eastern part of it. And I'm looking in a book here, and I think I sent you that picture, Sam, and on the left side is a 1910 photograph with four gentlemen standing in front of the Flatlands Volunteer Firemen's Association. The address is not in the photograph, but it's actually 1400 Rockaway Parkway, about a block or two from Glenwood Road in Canarsie. And it's a beautiful structure with a nice bell tower on top, and that's in 1910. By the 1920s, it was still there, or the bell had been removed from the tower, but the structure is still there. And I think that's my grandfather's car parked in front of it there in the 1920s. And then underneath are two photographs from 1969 and 1990. And that same structure is still there with the bell tower, of course, without the bell. In 1969, it shows that the Volunteer Firemen's Association building is now a fruit and vegetable market. But it's the same building as the one in 1910, which goes back to the 1890s, actually, with the Flatlands Volunteer Firemen's Association. I haven't been down Rockaway Parkway in a number of years, but as late as the early 2000s, that structure was still standing, all right, but in dilapidated condition. And there was a campaign underway by the 1980s and 1990s to get the structure landmarked. But it never happened. The Landmarks Commission said that the building was too dilapidated, although historically it was important, but the building in the 1969 photograph, you can really see, is really in sad shape as the fruit and vegetable market. But it was not until 1896 when the city of Brooklyn, by the way, the city of Brooklyn did not include all the other towns. Remember, there were 6 towns altogether, 5 Dutch and 1 English. The city of Brooklyn was established in 1834, which only included the northern end of Brooklyn, like the Brooklyn Heights, Borough Hall area, Red Hook area, and so on. And gradually, as the decades went on, the city of Brooklyn began to, I guess you might say, become imperialistic and gather in the towns. And the last towns were, I think, Gravesend and Flatlands. And in 1896, the city of Brooklyn annexed the town of Flatlands, which included Canarsie Village, where the Volunteer Firemen's Association was, and the fire department was deactivated. The volunteer department was deactivated in 1896, all right? And by 1898, when all of the 5 counties became the 5 boroughs of New York City, that's when the individual firehouses from the towns were changed. Their numbers remained the same, except another number was added to it. For example, the firehouse that was numbered 57 now became 257 as part of the fire department of New York City. So if you had a firehouse that was engine 55, for example, then it became 255 under the city charter. So the numbers remained the same, but a number was added in front of it when it became part of the city fire department. So all the volunteers are gone. The Flatlands, by the way, the Flatlands Volunteer Firemen's Association, it was deteriorating and it was small. So in 1903, a brand new brick structure that had three bays where trucks can enter and exit. The original volunteer one had just one bay, all right? But this new brick one in 1903, which originally was number 57 when it was a volunteer, now became 257 under the city. And the postcard I have here, it says Firehouse number 257, Canarsie, Long Island. It doesn't say Brooklyn, New York. It says Canarsie, Long Island on the postcard. So anyhow, this is what happened to the volunteer firehouses all over, and I'm sure not just in Brooklyn, but in all of the five counties or boroughs.
Is the postcard one of the things that you sent me?
No, that's not one of the ones I sent you. No, it's not.
If you could, because ladies and gentlemen, when I repost this just a reminder that the podcasts are up and now it's on Apple, Spotify, et cetera, I'm going to make sure to attach some photos. Ron, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, one of the things that has inspired me to go down this rabbit hole, and of course now I'm also considering another podcast regarding the police department, but we're focused on the fire department right now. Across from Gil Hodges' burial site in Holy Cross Cemetery is a statue dedicated to the Brooklyn Fire Department and to the when it was a city. I think that there's a few people buried around that whole area, but that's, you know, these little ornaments throughout the town that remind you of Brooklyn city history. And, you know, I always go to the fact that Brooklyn, more than any other place, was reluctant to give up its independence, even if it passed just by a nose.
Well, I'll tell you, if you want to know the exact numbers of the vote and how close it was in Brooklyn, the vote took place in November of 1897, after about 3 years of debate of the Consolidation Commission that was established in 1890 to discuss whether or not to consolidate or not. Finally, it was decided to put the vote to the voting public. And by the way, only men could vote back then. Women couldn't vote. The vote in New York City, which was Manhattan and the Bronx at that time, with over 900,000 votes cast, the vote passed overwhelmingly to consolidate. In Queens, which of course had a much smaller population and which still had a lot of farmland, the vote passed overwhelmingly. There must have been about maybe 6,000 or 7,000 votes cast and overwhelmingly passed. Staten Island, with even a smaller population, also passed overwhelmingly to consolidate. But in Brooklyn, which had the second highest population outside of New York City, which was Manhattan and the Bronx, there were about 130,000 votes cast. And because of the vote of the farmers that were in the southern and eastern end of Brooklyn, which included Flatlands and Canarsie, the vote passed by only 277 votes out of 130,000 that were cast, because the farmers wanted the modern amenities from the city, which would include paved streets, sewers, and be connected to the New York City water supply, which we are still connected today, which is the Croton Reservoir and, of course, the Ashokan Reservoir in upstate in the Catskills. So that's what happened when consolidation took place. The individual volunteer firehouses disappeared and became part of the New York City Fire Department. And that's when streets became more paved through the farmland areas in Brooklyn and in Queens. It's a fascinating history. And just going back to what Rob said about the Brooklyn Dodgers, I always tell people that they never moved. They're on an extended road trip.
Exactly. And, you know, as you go through Brooklyn, you know, obviously the Brooklyn Fire Department statue, the houses that still say Brooklyn Fire Department. But of course, we always end up in many ways pivoting to the Dodgers somehow, whether it's talking about Carl in the fire department or just talking about like you said, the extended road trip they're on. I feel as if the Brooklyn Dodgers at the time, them leaving Brooklyn behind, it was the last vestige, it was the last institution that connected Brooklyn, other than these different reminders from a physical architectural standpoint. It was the last vestige and institution that connected Brooklyn to its independent history. Because the Brooklyn Dodgers were created in 1883, I believe, when Brooklyn was still a city. And that was one of, I think maybe it wasn't as pertinent and it wasn't as discussed at the time. You know, I really have to do a complete deep dive paper to paper and issue to issue at the time of the conversation, but I really do feel as if the Brooklyn Dodgers leaving was the last connection of independent Brooklyn putting the borough behind it.
That's true, and I'll tell you, when the Barclays Center opened on the site where the Dodgers were hopefully going to get a brand new stadium on that site. And by the way, it would have been a covered stadium with a dome, all right? So you would have year-round events, which, of course, it never happened. But at the very first game for the Brooklyn Nets, a couple of the old Brooklyn Dodgers that were still around attended, and there was a big ceremony. Borough President Marty Markowitz, who was instrumental in getting the Barclays Center built at that site. He and I believe he was wearing a Brooklyn Dodger shirt, and I think one of the Brooklyn Dodger former players, I think, was wearing a Brooklyn Dodger shirt, connecting the Brooklyn Dodgers to the Brooklyn Nets on the site where the new Ebbets Field would have been built. So, again, that was connecting the baseball Brooklyn to the basketball Brooklyn.
Yeah, and, that's a whole other podcast for another day about where the Nets currently stand. And ironically, I'm looking out the window now and seeing a couple fire trucks, basically reminding me that before we go, I want to throw it one more time back to you for anything else you want to talk about regarding the history of the fire department in Brooklyn.
If we go back to the firehouse in Flatbush, the original fire company was directly behind the Flatbush Dutch Reformed Church. And the bell was rung right there. And eventually, by 1872, they built a brick firehouse on East Broadway. Now, East Broadway is now Church Avenue, okay? So on Church Avenue, about 100 feet east of Flatbush Avenue, between Bedford Avenue and Flatbush Avenue, that's where a brick firehouse was built in the 1870s. But because of a series of false alarms from that location, for whatever reason, I don't know, it was decided to replace the bell at the top of the newly built Flatbush Town Hall, which was built in 1875 at 35 Snyder Avenue. Snyder Avenue was originally called Grant Street. Flatbush Town Hall from 1875 still stands today, this beautiful New York City landmark Gothic structure, this Victorian Gothic structure on Snyder Avenue between Bedford and Flatbush still stands, and the bell for the fire was put at the top of the Flatbush Town Hall, and that was the end of the false alarms. But Church Avenue, by the way, straightened out. It wasn't a straight line from Flatbush Avenue. So it was straightened out about 1900, and then the brick firehouse that was built in the 1870s, that was torn down. So, and the firehouse today in Flatbush, well, I think there's two of them. There's one on Cortelyou Road near Westminster Road. And there's another one on Rogers Avenue, just off of Flatbush Avenue. So there are two firehouses in Flatbush that I know of right over there.
Well, there's also both the police department, I forget what the precinct is, on Snyder Avenue is also next to a relatively, like it's probably architecturally speaking from the 70s. The buildings are connected, the police department and the firehouse. And it's only a few blocks from where I live, only a few blocks from Holy Cross Cemetery. So it's on Snyder Avenue between Nostrand and Rogers.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. That I think that might be the 67th precinct, I think. I'm not sure.
Right. So, you know, we're getting close to an hour on air, and firstly, again, thanks to Rob Lopez for being able to call in and give us some insights into, you know, just I had never heard the story from him, so some insight into not only starting out in Brooklyn, but also what it was like to be a part of 9/11, and I would, even if, you know, this podcast is dedicated to the history of Brooklyn, the history of the Dodgers, and most of the time we're trying to stay basically pre-1962, pre-1957. We always love to talk about the legacy of that era as it pertains to modern affairs. So we greatly appreciate that. And Ron, it's always such a pleasure. You have such a plethora of information, a vast collection of information in your head, and it's always just fascinating to pick your brain regarding Brooklyn history. And of course, you and I have talked about. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think you've been to my home, and I think you've seen the bookcase in my dining room, with one, two, three, four shelves, which don't have room anymore for books, so they're piled on top of the bookcase. And there's another bookcase next to it, and everything in these two bookcases relates to Brooklyn and some aspect of its history. And some of the books go back to the 1800s. So, in fact, two of them are in front of me now on the dining room table, and that's where I'm getting the information about the Flatbush Volunteer Firemen Association and the Flatlands and Canarsie and so on. Eventually, Sam, I'm not sure exactly when, but I'm hoping, and so is my wife hoping, that within the next year or so, I'm going to be donating all of my Brooklyn memorabilia, my maps, documents, photographs, books, postcards, my Brooklyn Dodger collection. Everything is going to be donated to the Brooklyn College Archives in their library. I am affiliated with the college, and I teach a class there on Brooklyn history to retirees, and I'm a past president of the Alumni Association, and I live about 9 or 10 blocks from the college campus, so it's very convenient for me. I want all my stuff there.
That's great. That's amazing, and I also segue to Brooklyn College real quick. I'm sure that you can talk vastly about the history of Brooklyn College, we don't need to go down that rabbit hole now. But if there's any, also we'll talk off air. If there's anybody that you think can help complement the conversation when we eventually do that, we will chat about it and maybe even try to do it on Brooklyn College premises, which is such a beautiful campus.
Yes, it is. It opened in 1937, and I'll stop right there.
So, Ron, again, Ron Schweiger, the Brooklyn Borough historian, thank you so much, as always, for joining us. You were literally my first guest ever, and I greatly appreciate you always coming on and educating everybody about this former city.
Okay. Thank you, and I hope those who are listening enjoyed and got a little history lesson on Brooklyn firefighting.
And thank you all out there for your listening. It's so thrilling to still be doing this after almost 10 years. It's coming up, I believe, sometime at the end of June or early July. I'll have to look at the date. when Ron Schweiger was the first guest on the Bedford and Sullivan podcast. And I've had this idea since 2005. And through it all, I've had to develop as a writer, and you're never really not developing, both as a writer and as a human being. And recently I finished a sixth draft of a hypothetical pilot. It's the tightest draft, even if it's not completely there yet, it's the tightest draft that I've had. There's a lot of other material to attempt to get this in front of people and pitch this. But I cannot have done it without the encouragement and the constant listening that you all have done over these years. I would have given up a long time ago. But no matter how long this takes, we are going to get this done somehow, some way. And I greatly appreciate you all continuing to listen, even when I have a little too many sabbaticals in between episodes. So thank you again, all. Let's go, Brooklyn, and we'll see you on the next episode. Take care. Thanks again, Rob. Thanks again, Ron.
You're very welcome. Take care, Sam.